Live Creative Now, Episode 12.
Welcome to Live Creative Now with Melissa Dinwiddie, a weekly podcast to inspire you to create your art and share your work, because that's how you will change the world.
Hey, this is Live Creative Now, and I'm Melissa Dinwiddie, passion pluralite artist, happiness catalyst, and creativity instigator, here to address all your questions about living a full color creative life. This is a special live episode. Once a month, I host a special live call just for Live Creative Now listeners, where you can ask me anything you want about living a full color creative life. I take the best questions from the call and edit them into podcast episodes. And in this session, I answered questions that were all business related, questions about mailing lists, about social media share buttons, about marketing strategies for new creative businesses, and a whole bunch of stuff related to copyright. But before we get in onto all those juicy questions, I wanted to talk about something really important to me, and that is creative immersion. Now, I talk a lot about the importance of tiny and daily, and I'm really a big believer in the concept of tiny and daily. It is rule number 4 of my keys to creative flow, my rules for the creative sandbox: think tiny and daily. For most creative pursuits, although we think we need big chunks of time, we actually don't need big chunks of time to get creating. You can do your creative thing in the nooks and crannies of your time during your day. And I encourage you to set aside sacred creative time in those nooks and crannies to really make the space for it. And at the same time, it is so wonderful when we get to create in big chunks, when we get to fully immerse ourselves in our creative pursuits. So I make it a big priority to set aside a few really big chunks of time every single year to fully immerse myself distraction-free. One of those big chunks of time is coming up soon. It's my Create and Incubate retreat, 5 days and 4 nights in the beautiful hills above Silicon Valley in Los Gatos, California, from August 19th to August 23rd. Now, we all know how hard it is to stay focused on your creative thing when you also have to deal with laundry and cooking and emails and phone calls and errands and driving the kids to soccer and, right? That is why it is so valuable to go on a creative retreat. It's really hard to get that kind of full immersion experience at home on your own. But at Create and Incubate Retreat, you'll have 5 days of uninterrupted create time to work on any project you want: paint, draw, collage, make mosaics. There's a mosaic artist who's come every year. Do photography. There's photographers who have come every year. Work on your novel or your memoir or your play. I've had a couple playwrights come. Plan out your business strategy for the next quarter if you want. Or write that ebook you've always wanted to write. Or design that course you've been wanting to teach. You can really dive in and get so much done because there are no phones to answer, there's no laundry, there's no cooking to do because delicious meals are prepared for you 3 times a day. And let me tell you, there is something so magical when you get together in a room with a group of other creators and everyone is immersed in their own creative thing. It's like this special buzz of energy that puts everyone's creative power, it like drives it up to turbo. It's really magical. So these kinds of deep dives, I make time for them because they are so energizing. They fuel my well for months, for like a full year. I feel energized after a deep dive like this. And that's why I've made going to retreats like this a priority in my life. And that's why I started hosting my own a few years ago. If you would like to recharge your commitment to your creative spirit and fill your tank with a reserve of creative energy to propel you through the year, and you'd like to do it in a cozy, beautiful setting with support and guidance and just the right amount of structure. It's mostly unstructured, but just a tiny little bit of structure from someone you trust, yours truly, I would love for you to join me. And because you're a podcast listener, you can save $100 off the normal registration price. Just go to createandincubateretreat.com. That's createandincubateretreat.com. And the $100 discount is built in. Just pop it in your shopping cart and you'll register and get that savings. So I hope you join me. And whether or not you do, now on with today's episode. We start with a question from Patria.
I am wondering how you start this mailing list that you are referring to often.
So how you get a mailing list set up, or what's the specific question behind that?
I guess to start with definition.
Okay.
Is it a mailing list through email? Is it another format or platform? Is it And what are the various uses for it? I'm speaking specifically from my background of wanting to publish a coloring book, and we talked some about the differences between pursuing a publisher or self-publishing, and got the recommendation that if I don't have a mailing list of at least about 5,000 people, then I shouldn't even think about publishing with or going, you know, trying to get an agent and publishing that way. So I've looked at like how many Facebook followers I have. I would assume that that would be a source. And then just how many people I have on my current email list. But is that what we're talking about? And what are the structures that I would need to have in place to make that a viable, as easy to work thing as I can?
Got it.
Is that question better?
It's yes, that's great. Thank you. That gives me a lot more context, Patria. So Patria has been in a number of my programs, and she's currently in a pilot program that I'm running right now called the Dream to Done Accelerator. And in that program, we were talking as a side note kind of about publishing and the publishing world. And that's where this concept of the In these days, if you want to get a traditional publishing deal with a traditional publisher, then they are looking for books that they think are going to sell well. And one of the things that will show them that if you know your book could sell a lot of copies to recoup their printing costs and their whatever advance they pay you and all of that, is how big is your platform? Do you have a big audience of people who are waiting to gobble up your book when it gets published, right? And the number that I've heard batted around, and I don't know how accurate this is, but the number that I've heard is 5,000 people minimum is, you know, pretty standard for if you want to get a traditional publishing deal. That's not to say that you can't ever get a publishing deal without having 5,000 people on a mailing list, but you are going to increase your odds dramatically if you have at least 5,000 people on your mailing list. Bigger is better. They're going to sell more books, the more people that you are connected to. And also your platform includes not just the people on your mailing list, but the people in your network who themselves have an audience. So if I have, say, 5,000 people on my mailing list, but I'm hooked in with three other friends who each have 20,000 people on their mailing lists, who would be excited about sharing my book with their audience, that dramatically expands the buying base automatically, right? So that's where this is coming from. So, okay, there's lots of things in this concept of a mailing list. But the basics for when you're just getting started is you really want to have a way for people to subscribe to get information from you, to get updates from you, to get content from you. Like, I have my insiders newsletter. I have people who registered for this call got signed up on the newsletter or the mailing list that I have specifically for my podcast. which is a subset of the people who are interested in getting my weekly, approximately weekly, Insiders newsletter. I use a service called MailChimp, which I love, which is a super popular mailing list provider service, which you can start out with a free plan over at MailChimp.com. And I have, if you go anywhere on my website, melissadinwiddie.com, you'll find wet opt-in forms on the sidebar. You'll find an opt-in form at the bottom of every post and most of the pages on my site where people can sign up to get different kinds of content from me. So that's like the technical side of things, is you want to sign up with a service like MailChimp. There's lots of them out there. There's AWeber, there's GetResponse, there's Mad Mimi. There's a ton of them. But MailChimp has a free version, and I just happen to really like it a lot. So that's a good one. And you want to get that opt-in form on every single page of your website. Now, of course, that assumes you have a website. If you don't have a website, then you want to put one up that's going to be easy, at very minimum, is going to be a place where people can sign up to get information from you, right? So if all it is basically a landing page that invites people to opt in to get updates on whatever project, you know, your coloring book that you're going to put out or whatever, then they have a way to sign up, so you have a way to stay in contact with them. You will really, really, really want to have your own website, not just a Facebook page or, you know, used to be MySpace, right? That used to be the thing. Who even remembers MySpace? Nobody goes there anymore. It's unlikely that'll happen to Facebook in the next couple of years, but you never know. Anything could happen. And when you have your own website where people can sign up, then you don't have to worry about Facebook's terms of service agreement, terms of service changing, right? So all of a sudden they decide, you know what, we think we don't want people with coloring books on Facebook anymore. We're just going to close down all of those pages, right? They could do anything like that. So that's the sort of nuts and bolts technical side of things. How to get people on your mailing list. First of all, you never want to add anybody to your mailing list who hasn't asked to be there. That is known as spam. So a lot of people will start with their friends and family, which is great. You want to start with your friends and family first, but you don't want to add them to your mass mailing list without getting their permission. So you can email them. You can even send out an email from your Gmail account or your, you know, Mac mail account or whatever mail, your regular email account. Send out an email blast to a bunch of people, put all their email addresses in the BCC, the blind copy, so you're not sending everybody's email address all over the place, and say, hey, I'm starting, this is the project that I'm doing, and I would love it if you'd like to be on my list to get information about it, you know, whatever it is that you are producing that you want to do. And then some small subset of those people will probably sign up. You're not going to expect everybody to sign up, but that's okay, because what you want on your mailing list is the people who want to be there. People who want to be there. Legally, when you send out a mass mailing, legally you have to, there are certain things that have to happen. You have to include a way for people to unsubscribe in every single email. That's one of the important reasons to go with a service like MailChimp, because that's included in the every single email has an unsubscribe link. And every time I send out a newsletter, almost every time there is some small subset of recipients who unsubscribe. Either they are too busy, they just, you know, they're cutting down on their email, they're no longer interested in what I do, I was offering something for sale and that pissed them off, you know, whatever. They unsubscribe. And you know what? When people unsubscribe from my mailing list, I used to get really bummed out, and now I do a happy dance. Why? Because now I know that when people unsubscribe, they're the people who don't want to get info from me. So that means that there's a bigger percentage of people on my list who actually want to be there. And that's what I want. I want as many, I don't want 100% of people on my list who actually want to hear from me, right? So now what you do is you want to invite people to get on your mailing list. And one way to do that is to first have something of value to offer them every time you send them an email, send them an update on your, for example, with you, Patria, you might send them an update on your coloring book, send them updates on you know, here's a latest picture that I'm working on for my coloring book. Send them you might send them process pictures, information on how it's going. If people are interested in the coloring book, they're likely to be interested in its creation process. They might want to be first on the list to be able to buy it when it's done, right?
Yeah.
Something that your audience wants. That's the first thing to offer. And then as an incentive to get them to sign up now, a lot of people use some kind of sign up bonus, like a cookie, you know, a virtual cookie of some sort. It might be a page from your coloring book that they can download as a PDF. It might be, you know, I mean, common things that you'll see is a little e-course, or it might just be that the content of the newsletter is so something that they're just so dying to get that that's enough of a cookie for them. And that's a great situation to be in. But that's sort of the basics of it, Patria. You want to have a system that will enable you to capture people's email addresses so that you can continue to be in conversation with them over time. And then you want to invite people, and you can invite people in person. You can invite people through direct emails from your regular email account. Hey, my sister, you know, you want to be on my mailing list? This is what I'm doing. You want to stay in touch with me? Click here to sign up to get on my mailing list. You can invite people on your Facebook. If you have a Facebook page, there's a way that you can put a sign up form, an opt-in form on your Facebook page. But that's the upshot of it. Does that help, Patria?
Totally. Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. That's exactly what I needed to know. It clarifies the steps I need to take, the process, and yeah, very helpful. Thank you.
Oh yeah. You're so welcome. Bye, Patria. Thank you so much.
Next question is from Marcy. Marcy asks, I'm working on advertising more with social media. Is there an easy way to add Facebook share buttons, Pinterest buttons, etc.?
Oh, hey, Marcy. As far as getting buttons on your website, if you are using WordPress, which is a common website platform that a lot of people use and that I use, WordPress.org. Rather, I can't speak to WordPress.com because I don't use it, but if you are self-hosted with WordPress.org, which means that you've built your own website yourself, it depends on your theme, Marcy. The theme is the sort of facade of your website that gives it the look and feel, and different themes will have different ways to add the social media buttons. There's a plugin called Jetpack, which has a lot of different functions on it that you maybe something that you want to look into as well that enables you to share there. So look into the plugin Jetpack and look into your particular theme for your WordPress website and dig around in there, and you might have to do a Google search, but it depends on your theme, so I can't give you the specifics beyond that. So I'm going to go ahead and read Claudia's question. Your question is, how long have you been intentionally working on your business, and what suggestions do you have as early marketing strategies? Well, that's a bit of a complicated question, Claudia. I started my ketubah business and calligraphy business back in 1996, so that's a long time. This business, Living a Creative Life, I started my website in 2010 with the idea that I knew I wanted to somehow turn this Living a Creative Life concept into a business, but I had no idea what it was going to look like. And I came out with my first product called the Thriving Artist Project in, I think it was the fall of 2010. So it's been about 5 years now. And what suggestions do you have as early marketing strategies? Well, I am a big believer in the power of sharing your work in whatever format you are able to do that consistently in a way that nourishes you. So, for example, blogging. Blogging is a beautiful marketing strategy because it enables people to connect with who you are and get to know you. And blogging does not have to mean writing. If you're not comfortable with writing, you can do, if you're a photographer, you can do photo essays. If you're a visual artist, you can share process pics of your work with little stories behind what is going on in your head, or what inspired this piece, little stories from your life. People are often really afraid to share personal stuff. I'm not a big believer of airing your dirty laundry, but the more you can share yourself and who you are, the more it's going to give people an opportunity to connect with you. And people tend to buy from people and businesses they know, like, and trust. So when you blog, and that can include sharing on Facebook, it includes Instagram, it includes sharing your work and social media. When you share your work in that way with the world, it gives them a way to connect with you. So if I were talking to somebody who is just getting started right now, Claudia, you're on. Tell me a little bit about what you do.
Oh, okay. I'm a photographer, and I have a website, Claudia Tamman Images, and up until now, I've done the business somewhat I've kind of gone by the seat of my pants. I haven't done it intentionally, and I've decided to really start working on the business intentionally. The first thing I did was I saw Tara Gentile's class online, and which you were in, and that really got me going. So I've worked hard on my website, and I've gotten into Instagram. I'm on Facebook. I don't have a business page anywhere. I've started a Pinterest page, and so I'm trying to learn about all these different media and how to use them. So is that enough?
No, that's super helpful. So for anybody who's a visual artist of any kind, for real nuts and bolts business and marketing stuff, I highly recommend my friend and business partner, Corey Huff, who we used to run a program together called Art Empowers Me, and we used to host a podcast together called Creative Insurgents. And he's like the business marketing for artists guy. So I definitely recommend him. He has a course called Content Marketing for Artists or something like that is awesome. And there's links, affiliate links that will give me a commission if you want to, or you just go to his site, theabundantartist.com. And he's fantastic. He will walk you through all of that, the basic stuff. As far as like, is that enough? So building a business is a long game. It's a long haul game. People who start out and 3 months later are, you know, making six figures are real. I mean, those are like savant. Outliers. They're total outliers. That's not the normal way that's going to go. It's not something to, it's like great if you can make that happen. That's fantastic. But you have to approach it as a marathon, not a sprint.
Okay.
As far as social media is concerned, you know, there's so many out there, and there's new platforms that are being developed all the time. And it's impossible for any one person to do all of them really well. It's just impossible unless you have a team working for you, which, you know, as a starting out solopreneur, you don't. It's just you. So find one that you can wrap your head around and that you can enjoy using, and just get to know that one platform. You can tip your toe in the other platforms as well if you want, but don't stress about trying to master every social media platform out there. Pick one that is going to work for you and just work it, right? So like for me, my favorite one is Instagram. And I am by no means a master of Instagram. I'm not an expert in Instagram, but it's
You use it wonderfully well.
Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you. Well, I use it because I like it. And I'm so not an expert in it. I've never taken a class in it. I know there are people who are like Instagram pros and whizzes. I'm not one of those people, but I use it because it makes sense to me. And because with one click, I can share to Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook all at the same time. And that is a beautiful thing. And I also use, this is a great tool. Anybody listening, you want to write this down, ifttt.com. It stands for if this, then that.com. ifttt.com. ifttt.com. And what it is, it's a free automation service. You go up to the website and you can create a recipe that will automate certain tasks. So for example, I bring it up because if you're a user of Instagram, you may know already that you can set up right inside Instagram in your phone that you can set up your Instagram account to be connected to your Facebook account, but you have to choose either your Facebook profile or your Facebook page. You can't send it out to both from your Instagram phone app, but you can go over to ifttt.com and set up a free account there, and you can create a recipe so that if a post goes out from Instagram using a particular hashtag, say, then it will also be sent to your Facebook profile or your Facebook page or whatever.
Okay.
So you can use that service to great effect to multiply the work that you do with social media. You can multiply its effectiveness. Another tool that I've become very fond of is Buffer. I think there is a free version of Buffer. So check the free version out. And that also allows you to pre-schedule posts and things like that. But I would pick one social media platform. And Claudia, do you have your own website?
I do.
And are you blogging?
No.
So
not yet.
What are you sharing on social media?
At this point I have just started sharing on Facebook. I've been sharing photos with my circle of friends and putting updates about what I'm doing. And with Instagram, I'm just a neophyte at this point. And so I'm not really doing much yet.
Okay.
And one thing I noticed you do is you put a copyright symbol on all of your Instagram posts. And I was wondering how you did that.
Oh, yeah, super easy. And I actually, I'm glad you brought this up because I just removed the copyright symbol and I'm leaving just my URL. And the reason is because the reality is, like, if somebody wants to steal my image, yes, I could go, if I have a copyright symbol on there, that is a notice to them. I own the copyright regardless of whether I put the symbol on there. The copyright is inherent in the creator, regardless of whether the symbol is there. The symbol is your way of aggressively stating to the world that you are protecting your copyright.
Mm-hmm.
As an artist, we need to ask ourselves a question of, do we want to be in the business of aggressively protecting our copyright, or do we want to see our work shared widely?
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is, the way our legal system works, if somebody shares an image that has a copyright notice on it, then they're likely to know that they might be sued, right? Something bad might happen, or they might be told, they might not be sued, but they might be told you have to take it down. They're less likely to share your image if they're at all aware of copyright law, which God knows most people aren't, but if they're aware of it and respect it, they're much less likely to share your image.
Okay.
What I want is not so much, like, I'm probably not going to sue somebody for sharing my image, particularly because until I have them registered with the U.S. Copyright Office, the only thing I could sue them for is actual damages. If they make $5, I could sue them for $5. I'm not going to sue anybody for $5 because it would cost me $5,000 to sue them, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it's registered with the Copyright Office, what that does, the copyright is inherent in you regardless of whether you register or not, But if you register with the Copyright Office, then that gives you the power to sue for statutory damages in addition to actual damages. And I believe that's up to $100,000 per infringement incident.
Wow.
So that means if somebody makes $5, I could sue them for $5 plus $100,000, which means that they're less likely to try and infringe if they know that they could get slapped really hard. The reality is, it is such a hassle and so expensive and such an energy drain to sue that why would I want to do that unless it's really going to benefit me, right? Unless there's a really good chance that I'm going to get a return on my investment of time and energy and money, right? So my desire as an artist really is to get more people to my website, to get more people to come and know about me and buy my work and participate in my programs and listen to my podcast, stuff like that, right? So if I put, if you go to my shop on my website, you will see that my art there is not imprinted with the copyright symbol. It's imprinted with the Creative Commons copyright. Creative Commons, if you go to creativecommons.org, it's a different kind of license, a different kind of, I don't even have the right terminology to use it, but I am, the symbol that I have watermarked on my art, on my shop, says you have the right, it says in shorthand by little symbols, you have the right to show this on your website, you have the right to share it. I think there's different licenses that you can do, and I think the one says you don't have the right to, you know, reproduce it and make money off of it. But you can specify over at the Creative Commons website which Creative Commons license you want to imprint your work with. And I just haven't figured out how to do that on my phone yet, which is why why I've gone taken the little copyright symbol off and just I just use my URL now. Now, to the larger point of how I get that over, or the easy piece, it's just an app, and I think it's a free app called, what is it called? Hold on. Let me check. I have to look on my phone. I was going to say Over, but it might not. It's not. It's called Photo Marker. But Marker is spelled without an E. So it's, yeah, Patria actually just typed it in the text chat. It's PHOTOMARKR. And it's a very easy app. And all you do is you open the app, you grab the photo from your, you know, it gives you a way to grab the photo from your library, just like you would on Instagram, grab a photo to post on Instagram. And then it gives you a super easy way to plop whatever you want on top of the photo. Copyright, date, your name, your website, whatever you want. And then you can save it in your photos. And then when you're in Instagram, that's the photo you grab. So it'll just appear in your photos along with all the other photos. And Patria just texted that she didn't think it worked with an iPhone 6. I'm using a 6 and it works great.
Okay. So, Good to know.
Yeah, I also use, there's another tool, another app called Over, which allows you to put type in different, you can use different fonts and different colors and stuff. So when I have sold, when I have the word sold on top of an image in my Instagram feed, I use that app called Over. It might be paid. I can't remember if it's paid or free, but if it's paid, it's not very expensive.
So do you register your photos with the creativecommons.org?
Creative Commons doesn't have a registration. It's basically a site of information and, it's not a registration, but I use their symbols to watermark my art so that people who are aware of Creative Commons will know what they have the right to do without having to ask me. So I just put the copyright symbol on it, then anybody who is aware of copyright law and respects it will know that they legally have to get my permission before they share my work on their website, for example. I want people to put my work on their website. I just want them to link back and credit me, right? Check out the Creative Commons site. As far as registering, that is at the U.S. Copyright Office, and it's a .gov URL. I don't remember it's like copyright dot gov or something like that, but do a Google search. It's very easy to register a copyright. It costs $30 or $35. The price might have gone up. However, you do not have to pay $30 or $35, whatever it is, per piece. You can register your work in a series of an unlimited number of pieces. So my ideal protocol when I'm following it is that every few months I log in at the U.S. Copyright Office and I compile it, so you can do it all online now. I compile a series of all the works that I've created in the past 3 months, and for my one fee of $30, $35, whatever it is, all of those pieces are now registered with the U.S. Copyright Office. It's a really good idea to do it every 3 months, because I think 3 months is the, if you say you make a piece on January 1st and somebody infringes on February 1st and you register on March 30th or whatever, whatever 90 days is, whatever 3 months is, if you register your copyright after they infringe, but within 3 months, I think it's 3 months of when you create it, then it is considered as if it were registered. It's covered legally as if it were registered the day on the, you know, 3 months previously. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes. That's great.
So it's definitely worth doing if you have things that you want to protect, and you know, if you want to reproduce your work and sell it. I don't worry about putting my work online low res. Yes, there are ways to print from a low-res image, but most people don't know of them, and they're still not going to be as high quality as if you print from a high-res image, et cetera, et cetera. It's too much effort to worry about stuff like that for me at this point in my career. So I want it to be spread as widely as possible. I'm more interested in people knowing about me than I am worried about people stealing.
Okay. Okay, that makes sense. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Well, that's it. That's a wrap. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me today. If you're getting value out of this podcast, I would be hugely grateful if you would leave a review over on iTunes. Ratings and reviews on iTunes make a huge difference in how the show is ranked, and that makes a huge difference in helping other people find it. And that helps grow the creative uprising. So you can play a really important role in this movement simply by leaving a review. Plus, I would be super duper grateful. Also, if you have a question about living a creative life that you'd like to hear me address on the show, type it into your review and you may just hear it featured on a future episode. Because to incentivize you to leave a review, I prioritize questions that are left in iTunes reviews. Be sure to include your Twitter ID if you want me to give you a shout out if I use your question. And if you'd like your voice on the show, just go to livecreativenow.com/questions. But remember, I give first priority to questions left in reviews on iTunes. It's easy to find Live Creative Now on iTunes. Just go to livecreativenow.com/iTunes. Thanks again for joining me. And until next time, go get creating. Mwah.
Live Creative Now. Live Creative Now.
Subscribe at livecreativenow.com.